everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Scary movie love for scary movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley. Happy Scary Movie Month. Our exciting horror-themed month rolls on with a decidedly non-horror film. For this very special episode, I am joined by Adam Risky.
I just want to be happy.
And the woman who chose this week's film, or today's film, I should say, because this will probably be a bonus podcast, Alejandra Gonzalez.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want to say to the four people that were on my side of this debate, this is for you.
Aw.
Can you... Do you have a list of the four names? I'm not positive they exist.
I don't remember
exist.
Who the four people were.
They all live in Canada.
I counted. And this has been a long-awaited podcast.
This has.
So.
You have been
asking
to do Practical Magic for some time.
I think since like my very first appearance on the podcast.
For real?
Yeah.
Wow. Then this has been a long time. Well.
This is your master's thesis.
Good thing we got around to it in October. Anyway, so we're going to be talking about Practical Magic a little bit later in the episode. But of course, our scary movie challenge rolls on. If you are unfamiliar, please go to fthismovie.com. Every time you watch a horror movie during October, go to fthismovie.com and click on the scary movie challenge page for that day and write a 7-word review. We often read some of our favorite 7-word reviews on the podcast, which we are going to do now. I am a gentleman, so I am going to allow Alejandra to go first.
Thank you, Patrick. So.
M'lady.
Oh, God, I want to die.
Hold on, let me tip my fedora to you.
I know he's creeping you out, so let me just go, well, actually.
Okay. So, my first one I chose because it really resonated with me. Adam will know why in a second. Mm. So it's from JB on Wishmaster. I can't even get through these without laughing, but it reads, criticizing this film might just be ... risky.
Oh.
It's okay, JB, if you didn't like Wishmaster. It's
I
all
think
right.
criticizing that film is gin sensitive.
Whoa. Nicely done.
Yeah, you guys had a little spat about Wishmaster very early on, right?
Did we?
Yeah, very early on in our marriage.
Oh, me and Alejandra.
Yeah, not you, JB.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to air your dirty laundry. But.
No, this was early in Alejandra and my friendship, and I was like a lot more sensitive back then. And Alejandra said, you said it depressed you. And it was a mixture of you saying that a movie that I liked, you like sought me out to tell me that it depressed you, is like a little bit of that. And then also I thought you were being flip with depression. Mm. And wow. Then I was like, I'm going to unfollow her. And I did.
And then you got then to I, know me.
And then I,
and you're and, like, oh, wait, no, she's being serious.
No, I remember there was a moment where you said, did you unfollow me because of what I said about Wishmaster? And I had a moment where I was like, do I tell her the truth or do I just pretend like that wasn't it? And I decided to tell you the truth, and I'm glad that I did, because I think that opened up the door to a marvelous friendship.
And now you guys are stronger than ever.
Stronger than ever.
Yeah.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I would just like to clarify that I only told you what I thought about it because you recommended it like 50 minutes before.
Yeah, but I like, if... This is just kind of a blanket statement, but if somebody, if I say I really like something a lot, and I don't tend to recommend stuff to specific people. It's just I say like, oh, I really like this, and then it's up to that person if they want to watch it. But if somebody seeks me out to tell me that they didn't like something that I like, I tend to get pissy about it. I don't know why.
Okay.
So, I'm
it's
sorry.
Okay, now I'm married, so.
If we were to start just randomly going after Alejandra on Twitter and talking about how much we don't like Practical Magic, that would be a dick move.
Yes.
Instead, we're going to do it on a podcast where she chose to talk about Practical Magic. She invited it.
We have nowhere to hide.
She invited it.
Yeah. Like my 7-word review wasn't super complimentary to Practical Magic, but I hid it in the comments and I didn't go, hey, Alejandra, check out my comment about Practical Magic.
Don't worry. She still found it.
Yeah, she totally did. Except I think it inspired your first 7-word review.
Put you on the board.
Yeah.
Adam, what's next?
Okay. Kanji Chris for the Brood. Oliver Reed's short robe game on point.
Very nice. John Curvan for Hereditary. Old white people finally respect a millennial.
I chose that one too.
Nice.
Okay.
You're up, my lady.
Oh, fuck. Okay. I chose like 7 from Frank Levesque.
He's good.
So
yeah,
funny.
There's a lot of. I think I have 2 from him, so I'll cut it down.
So it's for holidays, and it says, "Jesus Christ, that's a creepy Easter bunny."
Yeah.
Because it's Jesus Christ.
Right. I get it. That is a creepy Easter bunny, by the way. Adam, I'm sure you have my next one. You go ahead and go next.
James Kiley.
No.
For The Sixth Sense. Toni Collette, 20 years of hot mommery.
Very true.
For sure.
Very
for
true. Sure. Matthew B. of Tales from the Hood 2. Feel like a Dumas Beach renting this.
Yeah, I had that one too.
I figured, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It hit close to home.
So true.
Okay, somebody named The Shape for Dead Alive. When attachment issues lead to detachment issues.
Very nice.
Jack C. for Drag Me to Hell. Probably the GOAT, G-O-A-T, of talking goat performances.
Oh, yeah. I saw that one.
Will Benson for Terrifier. Finally, a movie for woman-hating clowns.
No comment. Okay. Lacey R. for Murder Party. Whoever bakes with raisins deserves this fate, because true.
Okay, this
People
one
have strong opinions on raisins. I never have taken a stance.
Really?
Yeah.
They're good.
Yeah, no, right.
I got a good story about raisins.
Oh,
you
I can't
got,
wait
do you
to
have
hear
30
it.
Seconds?
Is this an episode of Raisin Talk?
Yeah, it That's is.
I stole that joke.
Raisin praisin? So, my sister and I, when we were growing up, we went over to my mother's father and mother's, my bubby and my grandpa's, and we couldn't pronounce their last name because we were little. So, like, they used to always give us raisins, so we called them Grandma and Grandpa Raisins.
We named both of my grandparents after their dogs. So we had Grandma Missy and Grandma Sunshine. That's a true story.
Yeah.
Notice how we will do anything to talk to avoid talking about Practical Magic.
I heard it through the grapevine on Raisin Prison.
You're
okay.
Up.
Tom S. Tex. This is kind of a cheat, but it was funny. So the 50 best horror movies you've never seen from 2014. Wishmaster is 7. That rings value doubled.
This is one of my favorites for the month from Louis Viljean. For the New York Ripper, proof that Lucio Fulci was on Quack.
This is for Vampire's Kiss by Daniel Alper, and it's in quotes. Okay, Nick, just do whatever you want.
Okay, so when I think of comedy heroes,
yeah.
I think Mike Pomero might be one of mine because I burn so many goddamn calories in comparison to him to land. And he just comes in and drops the Hiroshima and Nagasaki of jokes. So his of Misery. Turns out Sollozzo hated that Misery died.
Here's my Frank Levesque that I went with. A Nightmare on Elm Street. Mother was highly flammable to begin with.
Okay, I also have another Frank Levesque one.
Jeez, get a room, you guys.
We should do like an MVP award at the end of the month, but anyway.
Yeah, that won't
it's
get
for Starry
there.
Eyes. It's for
Starry.
It's for Starry Eyes, and it says A Star Is Born is Super Dark.
Yeah. I think I had that one, and then that's a great one.
Yeah. Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn. Oh, sorry, Aaron Keith for Evil Dead 2. Laughing Deer was prototype Billy Bass.
Matt Sollenberger for The Gate. Mark Jones, : those demons are all right. They're tiny. Tiny demons. I get happy when Mark Jones shows up in the comments. Practical
okay,
Magic, I
is...
like these witches when they were small.
I am quickly...
Like Kevin Rachel Wood.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm already regretting this Practical Magic episode.
You shouldn't. Keep going.
Gregory Clark on trauma. Argento's streak of supportive, loving mothers continues.
Yes.
Thor, Niels, Fager, Scoff, Jensen for Halloween 2 director's cut. Is that a unicorn? That explains everything.
Brent Peterson for There's Nothing Out There. Woo, good. I was starting to worry.
Okay, I think I only have one left.
Okay.
Oh, two. Okay. So, Stuart Gordon on Lords of Salem. Golden Retriever survived. My highest recommendation.
I got two more. Lindsay Wilkins for I am the pretty one that lives in the house.
Pretty thing that lives
I am
in
the
house.
Pretty thing that lives in the house. Yeah. You're missing a word in the title, Lindsay. It's okay. It's all right. Proof I am easily hypnotized by Ruth Wilson. And yeah, I don't get it either, but I am too. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Aaron Keith for Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. Mask or paint? You don't need both.
Okay, should I read my last one?
Sure.
Okay, so Frank again.
Oh, wow.
On Green Inferno. Meat was overcooked, would not go again.
Very nice.
My last one is Will Benson for The Nun. This dang movie's just pure silly nonsense.
Oh, I'll do a little pun action for my last one, too. DTE of The Howling. That fireside sex scene had me lichen throbbing. It helps if Jesus. I don't fuck up the joke. Lichen throbbing. Sorry.
You screwed up the joke! You blew the bloody joke! Let's just cut to the chase and talk about Practical Magic.
Anyway, guys, keep your 7-word reviews coming. As you can see, we are very entertained by them, and they've been a lot of fun to read so far. Alejandra.
Yes.
Have you seen anything scary lately?
Yes. So, actually, I've been doing a lot of rewatches, but I did watch something new to me on Saturday, which was Murder Party. I actually feel bad because I didn't know anything about this movie beforehand. But I really liked it. I also didn't know it was by the same person who did Green Inferno, and I would have never guessed.
Green Room.
I didn't know until the end anyway.
Yeah.
No, not Green Inferno. Green Room.
Green
wow.
Room, yeah.
My bad.
I knew what you meant.
But I know, but, you know, the comments.
Well, actually.
Point of order, good sir.
Okay. Yeah, no, I really like this a lot. It's very different from Green Room. God, I'm going to get crucified, but I actually think I like this more just because I like the humor in this. Mm-hmm. And I like that it's like criticizing art people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Have either of you seen Hold the Dark yet?
Not yet.
No. Okay. No, that's also by the same person, right?
Yep. Yeah, and I didn't watch it before October, and yeah. I don't know if I can watch it in October.
I'm in the same boat.
Because I don't know if it's a horror movie or not. So I'm holding off until November.
You're holding.
Well, you saw Practical Magic.
I did see Practical Magic, mm-hmm. but at least that has witches in it. Mm-hmm. So that's the technicality that we're going to try to skate by with.
Fair.
And a possession. I mean, there's horror-ish elements in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a nightmare to watch. No, just kidding. anything besides Murder Party?
Yeah, I saw... Well, I rewatched Return of the Living Dead.
Okay.
And I didn't notice until this last rewatch, but there's like a serious tonal shift. But I never noticed it because it's so smooth. Because the beginning is very like... It's supposed to be funny, but then it gets really intense towards the end,
mm-hmm.
and I really appreciate it, and I love it. I think everyone should watch it. It's probably my favorite zombie movie ever.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Bold statement.
It's a bold statement.
It is.
We're going to be bold on this episode.
I guess so.
Throwing it down.
Yeah.
What else?
Anything else?
Yeah, I saw The Fly.
Okay.
For the first time?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's like probably my 17th rewatch, but I talked about it on Twitter. This is like the only movie that's horror that I can watch with my mom, so it holds like a really special place in my heart, and she'll only watch it because Jeff Goldblum is in it.
Mm.
So I chose that for the first day because I thought maybe I could get her to watch other horror movies with me, but she was not having it. But yeah, this movie's pretty perfect. I actually wanted to watch this also because me and Rob DiCristino wrote about Eraserhead, and we mentioned in there that, like, Eraserhead kind of opened the door for Cronenberg, and I was, like, super trying to watch something body horror, so I chose this one, which is my favorite.
That's a good one, man. That movie is unbelievable.
And it's really sad.
Yeah. It is. It's I think I said this somewhere else recently, and I might be wrong. Is this, like, the best horror romance of all time? And also a tragic romance, don't get me wrong, but...
I put it pretty high up there.
In terms of, like, yeah, horror love stories, I don't know what we put in ahead of it. But I haven't given it much thought, I'll be honest. I just say things.
Let's just go with it.
The movie has one of my favorite lines in any horror movie where he's just like, are we having a romance? And I'm just like, oh, like, it's so sweet.
Oh, and it just, like, drops you right in the middle of them meeting. Oh, man, it's so good.
Yeah.
That movie's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any non-horror movies you wanted to mention? See how I'm leaving the door open?
I don't know. Sure. Yeah, I saw Star is Born.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Night School.
What is Night School? No, just kidding. Yeah, I saw...
The movie America Can't Stop Laughing With.
Oh, yeah. It's just a feel-good. It's such a feel-good. Yeah. But, I mean, this. I've been looking forward to this for months and months and months just because the trailer was really good. And I know you and I have talked about how I was kind of, like, nervous to go watch it because, A, I knew it would, like, affect me very, very strongly. And also, I was kind of worried it wouldn't live up to the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But it did both of those things. And I think everybody should watch it. I've seen some, like, hate on it on Twitter, and I'm trying to be good and not... be a bitch and open to everyone's opinions, wrong opinions about the movie. But yeah, I loved it. I think everyone should watch it. And the music is really good. I can't stop listening to it.
Yeah.
I would like to stop, please.
Are there songs on the soundtrack that were not in the movie?
No, I think it's just the movie.
No,
stuff.
I think it's pretty much the movie stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Is that song from...
That's pretty much...
Is the SNL song on the soundtrack?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it's...
So is Alec Baldwin's intro to the...
Is it really?
Yeah. I read something where they tried to make the soundtrack album by putting in, like, dialogue clips and stuff, make it feel like you're watching the movie again.
Oh.
It's pretty much like a summary of the movie because they do have, like dialogue from the actual movie, and it just makes it even worse to listen to.
Wow. All right. Would you say it's your favorite movie of the year so far?
I would say it's, like, my favorite movie of the last 5 years.
Wow.
Five years. Better than Draft Day? I'm not recommending it, but...
That came to him so quickly.
It's always on the tip of his tongue.
Yeah.
Let's not kid around here.
Vontae Mack, no matter what.
Do you ever listen to Blank Check?
No.
Podcast?
I know of it.
Yeah. So Griffin Newman is one of the hosts, and he's in Draft Day and told a good story about working with Frank Langella on Draft Day. On, I think, the most recent episode, which covers A Star is Born.
Okay.
So look, all the world's coming together.
Who does he play in Draft Day? Do you remember?
He's just like a guy who runs in and says something. I don't know. It's probably a small part.
Okay.
There
are no small parts in Draft Day.
Adam, have you seen anything scary lately?
Yeah. So, I'll just talk about stuff that I saw for the first time. So I saw Extremity, and it's the new Dread Central Presents movie. It's about, like, extreme haunts, and this one goes, like, as extreme as possible. I thought it was really interesting.
Okay.
I don't know how much I liked it, but, like, I was with it for the whole time, and it went in directions that I wasn't fully expecting, which was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
And it's really well made. It's just a hard movie to be like, I love it. It's just really well done for what it's trying to be.
Yeah. I 100% get that. Like, I don't know how often I will rewatch it except to sort of admire the construction of it, because it's not like a feel-good movie. But it, honestly, I did. I watched it immediately after Haunters.
Okay.
And it was very cathartic because yeah. that McKamey Manor guy pissed me off so bad that I was like, ooh, Extremity, good on you.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
And then I watched Two Evil Eyes. I finished that because last year at the Music Box of Horrors, before Land of the Dead, they played the George A. Romero segment only.
Which one Which did is he half do? Of the I've movie. Only seen the movie once. I can't remember. What,
Valdemar, the guy who's like the Waking Dead person.
So not Harvey Keitel.
Not Harvey Keitel.
Got it.
That was Argento.
Got it.
So I watched the whole thing for the first time, and I think I saw the part that I liked the most.
Got
the
it.
Argento stuff is, it's too long, mm-hmm. but it's not bad. It's weird, though, because there's really no wraparound or framing device. It's just like,
it's like watching two okay Masters of Horror episodes back to back.
Exactly. Yeah. So like there's stuff in it. I think like the Argento one finishes strong, so like it kind of makes up for the lulls in the middle, but it was fine. I was okay with it. Mm-hmm. It was a lot better for a anthology than Dead Time Stories, which is what I watch next. Mm. And there's stuff in Dead Time Stories I really like. I like the opening title song. I thought that was like really kind of neat and fun. I
still don't know why we turned out like we did. Something like that, remembering these
something
dead time tales,
stories. Yeah,
dead time stories as a kid, or yeah,
yeah.
It was catchy,
and I thought the uncle telling the kid stories was really weird because the uncle's just so bizarre. It's like something out of like an Italian horror movie where it just something's not right.
Right,
here.
Right, right.
But the stories itself, I thought just were. Like, by the third one with Goldilocks and the Three Bears, I was just like, are they just making this up as they go? Like, it really felt like chaotic in an uncomfortable way,
yeah.
like where you just were waiting for it to end, and it could end at any second. It
it's
was
really
just so arbitrary.
Silly and broad, but never actually funny.
Yeah,
and that's a hard thing to sit through.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm glad that I finally saw it because the thumbnail for it is very intriguing. It just looks like ooh, Dead Time Stories, and then you watch it, and it's you know,
did you watch
it's
it
Dead
on
Time
Amazon Prime?
Shudder.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I watched it there, and that was. I guess I'll mention one more. Like, I rewatched Halloween 4 for the first time
yeah.
in a while. And then I read your article about it.
Mm, I wrote that a long time ago.
My God, though, you nailed it.
Did
like,
I?
It's
good job, me.
So it's so.
What a relief.
It's so great because you care about Ellie Cornell
yeah, yeah, yeah.
and Danielle Harris.
Yeah.
And they're so good in it. And you yeah. care so much about them. And that doesn't happen often in really any
slasher
movie
movies,
or
yeah.
especially a slasher movie.
Yeah.
So like you have this giant emotional investment that it's almost like the Michael Myers stuff is just a nice to have. Like you're just like really into like the sister relationship. So.
They're not really sisters.
I'm sorry.
And Ellie Cornell will not let you forget it.
Double scoops.
Double scoops.
Yeah. They're my double scoops. So yeah, I was really happy with the revisit. I was almost like, yeah, I'll watch Halloween 5 next, but then I remembered
Don't.
That that's not the yeah. right way to go.
No.
So I went right to Halloween 07.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Can
you
I
gotta,
ask you a
you
question?
You gotta skip 5 and 6 if you like both of those characters.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Adam,
yeah.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
I need to know if you agree with the statement that the third installation in horror franchises is typically the best.
Give me some examples.
So Halloween 3, Friday the 13th 3,
Nightmare
Dream
on Elm
Warriors,
3.
Leprechaun
Patrick
3.
Patrick has had enough of this conversation.
Hellraiser 3.
I don't think it's the...
No, that shit falls
okay,
apart
yeah,
hard.
No, I don't think so.
But it's the most frequently best. That
no.
sentence that makes sense.
I like Halloween 3 and I like Nightmare on Elm Street 3 a lot.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say
Friday
the 13th
3 is fun.
I like 4 more than 3, though.
Because it's better.
Yeah.
Well, I guess things. I have to disassemble my dissertation now.
Yeah. Stop with these blanket statements. Just say you like Halloween 3.
And Dream Warriors.
And Dream Warriors,
big,
yeah.
Big proponent of Dream Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
How was Halloween 07?
The same movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sort of want to see Practical Magic, but with William Forsythe's character from Halloween in it.
Interesting. As Goran Vishnick or
yeah.
as Sandra Bullock?
Yeah, he's just like, I'm making a mental list. Like, I want that. Like, he's so awful in
yeah,
that movie.
Yeah, a lot of people are awful in that movie.
That it's really funny. I don't know. I know it's not supposed to be, but,
right.
like, I just find it so over the top that it's becomes funny. So,
I think I'm waiting until the new one to rewatch that one.
Okay. Yeah. Love Hurts sequence still works.
It's a little silly. And I say that as somebody who, you know, kind of likes that movie.
Not silly.
I don't have a ton because I keep doing these shows. So, I watched a movie on Netflix called Truth or Dare. Not Blumhouse's Truth or Dare. This is a different Truth or Dare that came out, was made last year, directed by Nick Simon. And it starts, and it's not great. And I'm like, oh, was this made for Sci-Fi Channel? And then the longer it goes on, the better it becomes. And it's like almost not a movie. Mm-hmm. It's a group of kids who start playing Truth or Dare, and there's some spirit who starts making them do dares. So it's like it's very Final Destination-y, because it's like you have 2 minutes to pull out 3 teeth, and then they have to do it. And they keep escalating and escalating. And that's basically the movie. It's just scene after scene of that. But I was surprised by the end at like how invested I was in the whole thing.
Who is anybody in it?
Nope. Didn't recognize a single person.
Okay.
But I, yeah, it was surprisingly decent.
How did it pop up on your radar?
I think it was new on Netflix, and I just kind of always have to monitor that because of the Friday column. So, yeah, but it's I think it's worth a watch. Another Netflix movie I watched, Malevolent, also new on Netflix. I liked that one less. It's like a brother-sister who are these paranormal investigators, but they're basically con artists. And wouldn't you know, they come up against something that might be real.
That happens quite often.
You know what? Anytime somebody's a con artist, all of a sudden they're confronted with the real thing.
Yeah.
I would watch Truth or Dare. And then the last movie I will talk about is a movie that I have been promising for months. Since February, I think I've been promising Alejandra that I would watch this, and it is Santa Sangre, which you wrote about during 1989 week, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And I have been promising you that I would watch it and not watching it, and then my whole plan was to like, ooh, I'm going to watch it before this Practical Magic show and then spring it on you. And then I forgot to do that, so 3 o'clock hit today, and I was like, fuck, and I watched Santa Sangre. So I've only lived with it for, like, 4 hours. That is not long enough to live with that movie. I can't say that I fell in love with it the way that I think you love it. But I have nothing bad to say about it, and it's super weird and interesting and incredibly striking visually. There's some stuff, especially near the end, there's an image involving a bunch of wedding dresses, and another thing where a couple embraces and kisses and starts to sort of float up in the air. It's unbelievable. And actually watching it, 2 things struck me. One is that it's a movie out of time. If you told me that movie was made in 1974, I would believe you. If you told me that movie was made in 2010, I would say, yeah, sure. which is a pretty impressive feat, I think. It also reminded me a lot of an Italian horror film in a lot of ways. I think there's a lot of sort of psychological stuff with the mom character that is very common in Italian horror films. I think there's one murder sequence that is straight out of an Argento film. So I definitely liked it, but I can't really expand on my reactions to it because I think I have to let it sit for longer.
I wonder if you'll like it more the more time you spend with it.
Yeah.
That happened to me, I think, too, because it was just so weird that I felt uncomfortable for a long time after finishing it. So
it's a lot to absorb, but I went back and reread your piece, and it's great.
Of course it is. It's me.
I know.
Let's be honest. Totally joking. Well, actually, you're not that great.
Speaking of you having great taste, should we talk about Practical Magic?
I think we can just call it.
Always ready.
I'm gonna let you open it up, because obviously this is a movie that is very dear to you, and you were really pushing for a podcast on this. So,
Well, I was pushing for a podcast on this because I think our lady listeners will really appreciate it, because I don't know a single, especially I know like Lexi loves this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm cannot characterize that all women like this movie.
Lot of lady movies.
You literally named one lady who loves it.
Well, I'm just trying to represent the women in
which
the,
I appreciate.
On the website.
Yes.
So, I think it's worth talking about. I think it's always brought up around spooky season. How many times have you seen on your timeline not brought up by me? A lot, I'm sure.
What? Are you joking right now?
No, I'm being serious.
It is never brought up during spooky season, ever, and I never see anyone talk about
it
but
you.
It's on HBO this month. That's about as...
I heard United Airlines is also putting it on their catalog.
Am I crazy? Or, like, Warner Brothers 98, between, like, this and City of Angels, like, they all look like movies made only to play on domestic air travel. Like, they all look like... This is the movie that you kind of watch, and then we're going to show you Friends. Like, it's that.
Here's
an or it's episode just
like, of. Like, these movies aren't even called, it's not even called Practical Magic, it's called AOL Keyword Practical Magic.
I'm not arguing that it's, like, a greatly made film or anything. I'm arguing that, like...
I'm just saying that the aesthetic is, like, very specific.
Yeah.
That's all.
Well, I really like the aesthetic. It's really warm. It's, like, definitely a comfort movie for me, and I don't know if I want to talk about this later when you guys come up with your arguments, because I think I've built a really good case around it, so I want to hear how you guys feel about it first.
All right.
Go ahead.
This is a show I'm dreading a little bit, because I think you're the best, and, like, I just don't want you to be upset, because I'm doing exactly what I said I don't like people doing to me.
Well, we're doing a podcast on it, so it's different.
I know, but like I don't want to walk on eggshells. I just want to be honest, and I just really don't like this movie much at all.
Oh my god, I thought actually you would be easier on it than Patrick would.
No, I mean, I really like, you know me, I wrote an article about Anne Hathaway movies with you. Like, I'm I'm down with the movement. I mean, like, but it's just Practical Magic is, I don't know what movie it wants to be. I think, like, that's kind of it. And also, it's so obvious to me ways that this movie could work, and it doesn't choose to do any of them. Mm-hmm. And it always goes for really, in my opinion, audience unsatisfying subplots. And it just is, like, everywhere you turn is a wrong decision in a lot of ways.
Well, I can agree on the subplot thing. I actually think the movie would work better if, like, Aidan Quinn was not in it. And I love him.
He was, like, one of my favorite parts of the movie. And that was just because he was so normal and so ordinary that it was, like, reminding me of, like, Paddington Bear, where it was just like, I'm just Aidan Quinn. And I'm just like, yay. But Aidan Quinn shows up way too late in the movie for, like,
it's
the character that he's supposed to
it's
be
nuts
in,
that he's introduced.
In the context of his story.
Yes.
I think it's, like, definitely telling, like, three different stories.
Okay. What are the three?
It's telling eight different stories. It's eight different movies.
Yeah. I want to deep dive into the specifics. So, like, which three are you thinking?
So there's, like, the curse, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's the whole shit going on with Nicole Kidman and her abusive, disgusting, like, ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
And then there's the love story.
Vizhnik.
Yeah. Good on ER.
Okay. I thought for the longest time that was Colin Farrell.
No, yeah. He didn't pop yet.
Could have been.
But, moving on. And then there's, like, 80%. Oh, and they cast me as Sandra Bullock.
Slow your roll, Tigerland. It was Goran Vishnik.
And then the Aidan Quinn stuff is, like, the third story. I guess that goes with the first story, but I understand what you guys are saying. Like, it does say it's telling a lot of different stories, but I think it's fine.
Okay. And maybe this is just a case of bad marketing also, but I thought for 20 years, this was a comedy. And when I watched it, I was like, what is this? 'Cause this movie is like a drama much more than a comedy. And I'm going to say probably the thing that I think both of you will disagree with me and a lot of people listening will disagree with me. I don't have much enthusiasm for dramatic Sandra Bullock. I like her much more as a comedic actress.
Yeah, I do too.
And I think that it's almost like you're tying one arm behind her back when you give her a role like this. And it, like, if she was allowed to just cut loose and not be, you know, Mrs. Mopey the whole movie, I think you would have a much better movie. It's like in Ocean's 8. It's just like, why are you doing this to her? Right. Like, she's not your straight person. She's like really funny. So I don't know. And, I also don't think that this movie has much of a sense of humor about itself at all,
At the same time, though, I don't think it's like taking itself too seriously either.
I don't know. I mean, I wanted them to embrace being witches more. I felt like they felt like it was more of a burden in a lot of ways than just embracing the culture. And I think it's just like, you know, if you were making a movie about Italian culture, or Greek culture, or anything like that, like, you know, invite your audience into this culture and like show them why they should love it as much as the people who are in it, you know, love it and everything like that. Bring them in. And I feel like there's none of that here. I feel like there's some kind of like they'll mention like some keywords and things like that, but I wanted to be brought into it, and I just never felt that way.
That's actually really interesting, because I forgot who did, like, an article that surveyed real-life witches and asked them what the most accurate portrayal of, like, witchcraft on screen is, and Practical Magic was the most common answer. Mm. And I actually would really agree with that. And I think that the point is the witchcraft... I mean, I wrote a piece on it, too, but, like, the witchcraft is definitely, like, a stand-in for something bigger. And so, of course, she's going to be kind of, like, hesitant to own it when she's been, like, ridiculed for her whole life. You know what I mean? Like, her sister doesn't care because her sister left the town, so the town isn't, like, scrutinizing her. And so her aunts, obviously, are very much into the whole thing. And then the whole point is her journey into, like, empowerment through that. So I think it makes sense. And I think we definitely do get like a lot of the witchcraft stuff.
I feel like I see what you're saying about, you know, the witchcraft stands in for something else, but I think it only does that when they decide it does that. Like sometimes witchcraft is just witchcraft, and then other times it's a metaphor for this other thing. And the movie keeps sort of wavering back and forth. I totally see what you're saying, Adam, about Sandra Bullock. I think she still works in this movie only because I think, and this isn't true of everyone, this I can only speak for myself, she engenders a lot of goodwill, mm-hmm. you know, towards me. She's a very sort of warm presence. And so I'm sympathetic towards her almost immediately by virtue of the fact that she's Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
And if it was any other actress, you know, I think this movie falls down another two steps because I can't even care about this person at all. Mm-hmm. I only really care about this character because she's played by Sandra Bullock. Has anyone read the book?
I have not.
No.
Okay. I haven't either. I feel like if I read the book, a lot of this stuff would work better. To me, this seems like a disaster of adaptation where they just sort of took things from the book without really figuring out how they work, how they pace out as a movie, because this movie is a structural nightmare. As we've said, it's like eight different movies. Characters leave and come back with no significance. We don't understand why they're leaving. We don't really know why they're coming back. A lot of time passes. Major events happen. Like you said, Aidan Quinn is showing up way too late. We spend, honestly, too much time with the first husband, and that's not even that much time, Mark
Feuerstein.
Feuerstein, yeah. Yeah.
I almost wanted it to be, and I mean, you know, whatever. It's like I'm trying to pick up like the carrots of things that I liked in the movie and what I wanted to see more of. And if it was, you know, say you get rid of the curse and it was mostly just about Sandra Bullock wasn't really embracing being a witch all that much, and she found love with this normal guy, and they were raising a family, and then the fly in the ointment, so to speak, for her, like, ignoring witch culture was Nicole Kidman shows up, and she's, like, this alpha witch. Like, I would like that, and maybe I should just watch Bewitched, because I don't know. I haven't seen it. But,
do not watch Bewitched.
But I
do not watch Bewitched.
But I thought, like, if there was some kind of, like, a culture clash or something like that, or, like, I almost said Anne Hathaway. If Sandra Bullock, if Sandra Bullock kind of re-embraced her roots, so to speak, like, by the influence of Nicole Kidman being back in the picture, I think, like, that would maybe be, like, a better movie.
And again, the movie does a little bit of all of it.
Yeah.
But never really commits to any of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the curse is kind of important because it informs, like, why she kind of is, like, opposed to the whole thing and how, like, she doesn't want to be involved with magic. But then she has to be in order to save her sister, which is, like, what I'm talking about. Like, she has to stand in solidarity with the witchcraft, which is clearly a metaphor for feminism. And I don't know. Maybe you're right, and I think Aidan Quinn can stay, and then, like, we can get rid of the curse.
Fine, Aidan, you can stay.
The curse feels like one thing, and they come back to it when they need to, and then other times they kind of don't. And I like the movie you're describing, where she is trying to get away from a life of witchcraft but has to come back to it. But again, I feel like this movie only kind of does that.
Well, okay, can you, like, elaborate on that?
I think the movie changes what it needs to be from scene to scene. And so when the curse matters to Sandra Bullock, it's like, I can't do this because of the curse. And then in the next scene when she needs to practice some witchcraft or whatever, it's like, all right, I'll do it. I don't get a sense of any actual conflict in her, with the exception of, like, a scene where she, like, yells at the sky because she's angry about the curse, which is embarrassing, and the scene where she can't lie to Aidan Quinn, which I think is an okay written scene, you know, in terms of what they have her say. Like, well, okay, technically they're not lies, but we also understand why he doesn't believe her when he says, did you kill him? And she says, oh yeah, a couple times. He just thinks she's fucking around, but actually she's telling the truth. So I think that's kind of an interesting scene. I wish there was a little bit more of that struggle to sort of walk in, kind of being pulled in two different directions. And again, there is that in the movie. It does exist. I'm not saying it's not there, but I think the movie has to service so many other things that nothing ever really gets enough attention.
But
here's the thing. I will say this. You like this movie. You are a fan of this movie. And so I
love
think,
this movie.
Exactly.
And I would just like to say to the four people that wanted this episode, I do not hold the same opinion as Patrick and Adam.
Yeah, no, that's
you can true. Talk to me. My DMs are a safe space.
I have movies where, you know, we're talking about, like, oh, there's all these subplots and it goes in all these different directions. I have movies that do that I really like, and it doesn't bother me. I'm like, that's fine. I'm in it, so I don't care where it goes. It can have 20 subplots. I'm into all of them because I'm in this world. So I understand if you like the movie that shit's not going to bother you.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess, like, my experience watching this movie is, like, a little bit different because, well, I've been watching it since I was, like, a little girl, so obviously,
take,
like,
those... Some of us were adults when it came out.
But I've been watching it for a long time, so those things, like, never really stood out to me. And for some reason, like, when I watch them now, they still don't stand out to me, because what does stand out to me is, like, I love how intimate the relationship between the sisters feels. And I kind of like... I don't know. I just like the whole sisterhood aspect of it, and not just, like, blood sisters, because by the end, like, the community has to embrace witchcraft also in order to, like, come against this, like, scumbag, and that's the only way that they can get rid of him, you know, dustbuster and all. Patrick,
the fucking dustbuster. Okay. And again, I like that as an idea. I like it as a theme. I think the execution of it in the movie is garbage. I think the movie, sorry, garbage is too strong. I think the movie panders at every turn. I think, to me, I'm very frustrated by it. I think the score is obnoxious. I think a movie where you have people singing and dancing around in a kitchen in a circle is automatically pandering to a certain audience.
Can I tell you what I texted to Alejandro last night?
Yes.
I said, does this happen in real life where women specifically dance around houses together? Because I see it in every Annette Bening movie, and like it's all in a lot of like trailers to movies. Yeah. And I just don't want to be like naive, but like that's not my experience in life ever, like with anybody that I know, that they just kind of dance around their house and sing.
I think even that ending scene where they all have to come together, I mean, I think the Dustbuster joke is lame, but okay.
Can I make an argument for it?
Sure.
I think it's like kind of funny.
Okay.
Because I don't want to like read too much into it, but I like that it's like a modern technology, because it makes, I don't know, it just modernizes the movie and like the theme.
But I don't think it like goes to any length to say, well, it doesn't have to be a broom. That's sort of a symbolic thing. What matters is X. It's just a dumb gag about a dustbuster so they can stick it in a trailer. And then even Margot Martindale being like, ladies, let's clean house. And then all the women are sweeping. And it's this bold statement of feminism that features a bunch of women cleaning house. Right? Do you see a contradiction there? I'm not saying the feminists don't clean houses, but I'm saying there are some traditional female roles, you know, that have been sort of codified for all these years, and one of them being sort of keeping up the house. And if you're going to break out of that, break out of that and be a feminist movie that isn't like, our big gesture is, let's sweep this floor.
Yeah, but
let's make dinner for a man, everyone.
Too much into the brooms, but also like, they chose to do it, which is how feminism works. We're going way too deep into the broom thing, but like, I
found myself like kind of spacing out during the movie a lot. But I would come back in for like, it's like when you tune out because nobody, and then somebody says your name and you snap into focus.
What's that?
I think that's narcissism. But like there was, when I was watching the movie, like there'd be like a scene where they keep talking about like waffles or pancakes and syrup and stuff. And I was just like, ooh, syrup. And then I was like into that scene because I'm just like, they threw the syrup in the water. Like, who does that?
I love those little girls. I think they did such a good job. I love Evan Rachel Wood, obviously, but
she was shouting, the 10 years out, Catherine Hardwick.
But like that other little girl, she didn't stuff, right?
Who was it? I know Camilla Bell was young Sandra Bullock, right?
Okay,
I don't know who the other girl is.
Evan Rachel Wood's sister in the present day.
Yeah, I'm trying to like. Okay, Alexandra Art Trip.
Oh, let's sure, see. Her.
Oh, AA.
Yeah. Whoa.
Okay, yeah, she's not in anything. She's in like three things. So. Never mind.
Could you recognize her from multiple viewings of Practical Magic?
Yeah.
when you mentioned Margot Martindale,
Martindale,
yeah. I remember when I saw her name in the credits, I thought it was Marguerite Monroe. I confused the two, so the whole movie I was waiting for Marguerite Monroe, and I'm like, you sick fuckers! Like, I was very disappointed.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But yeah, those little girls were fucking adorable, and I kind of liked that. I mean, actually, I don't know how I feel about it, but they're obviously like why stop laughing. I liked that there was a redhead sibling again, and like it talks to like a generational thing, which I really like. So, and I mean, it's like sister aunts, then sisters, and then like sister daughters, you know what I mean? I like that. I don't know. I know the movie's corny. Okay. I'm nothing if not corny.
So it does feature three generations of sisters.
Yes. You got that part right.
But I just, but then what does it do with that? I guess is what I'm asking. Like, you like that there are three generations of sisters in the movie.
I think that, how do I put this? especially with something like witchcraft, it's something that's been passed down through generations. And I think the same, I hate like bringing back the feminist thing, but like, it's a really important aspect of the movie to me, especially like right now. So I like that at the beginning, it was all like the community was against the witchcraft thing because they didn't particularly understand it. And then it stayed so strong throughout the generations. And then now is like when people are embracing it. And I think, I don't know, that really spoke to me, especially like with the current events.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really like that.
You know, there are so many witch movies that deal with feminism, and you've written about a bunch of them, The Love Witch and Season of the Witch. And to me, Practical Magic is like, the mall version, where it's just like, it's the easiest sort of Lifetime version of some of these ideas.
I'm glad you brought up those other titles, because
they also have witch in the title.
No, they're,
well, this one doesn't,
but also they're really interesting. I don't love Season of the Witch, but like, at least it's interesting. But like, The Love Witch is a really good movie. Mm-hmm. The Craft is, I think, in the details, I think for novices it's more interesting. It kind of brings you in a little bit more. I mean I mentioned earlier that I felt like this movie kind of I don't know, it's either like they say things like Belladonna or something like that, and you can kind of understand like in the context what they're talking about and whatnot, but like it's almost, and I get, you know, that real witches like the portrayal and they see it as the very realistic, but maybe it's too insular or too inside baseball. Like, cause I just don't feel like, and this is a dumb comparison, and I feel really bad saying this because it's like, it's about as stupid of a male dumb comment ever. But like, I watch Harry Potter and I'm like, man, it's fun to be a witch or a warlock or a wizard or whatever. Right. And like, I'm just like, this is fucking awesome. Like, look at this castle and stuff like that. And here it's just like, we live in this beautiful house and we're always sad. And I'm just like, I would think that being a witch would be fucking great. I mean, like, that's why you become a witch, right?
No, I mean, like, it's not been great. It's not been a great time for many witches. So I think that this is actually like really important because I don't know, I just really like that it's more real, and I do love all that fantastical stuff. I mean, come on, like, it's me, but they're normal women, and like, I don't know.
I wasn't saying that they're not normal women.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, I just like that it's authentic. It feels authentic to me. And I don't really feel the absence of like the magic.
Okay.
Is that what you're saying though? Cause like,
I just wanted wonder, I guess. And the most I got was that they jumped off of the roof at the end with the umbrellas, which
but the whole town is there to watch.
But I mean, like, if that was like the first scene of the movie and then it was like, it's your thing, do what you want to do, like, I would be like, yeah, being a witch looks cool. And then you could get into the, like, I just never found like,
and I don't even mind the lack of wonder. I'm fine with the realism, as long as it's realism inside either a compelling story, or in the absence of a compelling story. You know, Season of the Witch doesn't have the most compelling story, but it's presenting a lot of interesting, challenging ideas.
Yeah, like social I can't talk. What did you do to me, Alejandro? No, social dynamics at the time.
I think Practical Magic takes a lot of shortcuts. I feel like Practical Magic says, like, we're feminist because it features a room full of women being like, yay, women, girl power. But I don't think it's actually addressing any ideas for me, you know, again, because I think it panders at every turn. It's like, yeah, we could say something here, but we want to appeal to like the middle American, like suburban mom who doesn't go to movies. And I'm not characterizing you as any of this, Alejandra. I'm saying, I feel like the movie, in terms of its construction, in terms of the music, in terms of the cinematography, in terms of the way it's cut together, it just has the vibe of like this sort of kind of like pandering basic thing.
I mean, like I said, I don't think it's like great, but I think that it's feel good, and I think that if it's for somebody who's not really invested in fucking like George Romero, it's a good movie to watch if you want like a little bit of girl power. And I think a lot of women would agree with me. I don't know if we're following the same people, but I see Practical Magic talked about a lot during the season, and it's pretty much all women, which is a shame because I think that this movie could be enjoyable for everybody, but obviously it's not.
And that's okay. I mean, like, I think it's great that certain movies speak to I'm not even like lumping it into gender or like any type of background base, like just on an individual basis, it's great. Like when a movie speaks to anyone,
yeah, for sure.
It's just unfortunate when somebody who loves something is talking to two guys who just don't know what to say.
Well, and I'm trying to find a way in. Yeah, I'm trying to.
I am too. I mean, like there, like I said, there was like moments that I like. Sometimes I would, and I'm gonna sound so like stupid just saying stuff like this, but I mean, like I'll. And I don't mean this as a joke. Like, I'll stop during the middle of a scene. I'm like, wow, that's a beautiful set. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. Like, there's certain things that I really appreciated, like, aesthetically. Or, like, we haven't talked about Nicole Kidman yet. I mean, like, so charismatic.
Yeah.
Like, just...
And very well cast, very, obviously, as sort of the town vamp.
Yeah, right? Exactly. I mean, like, there's stuff
the
like
bad
that.
Sister.
But, and maybe, you know, I'm being limiting in terms of, like, I'm just saying, like, what I want out of a movie as opposed to what the movie actually is. But, like, if I see Sandra Bullock, who's a great comedic actress, and I see Nicole Kidman, who's about the best person you could cast as a vamp, I don't want to see them running away from an abusive man for 2 hours. Like, that makes me really just bummed out. And not that they can't tell that story, but it's just not the story that I was wanting to watch out of this mall package, if that makes sense. And then it gets into the, all the seance stuff, or the possession stuff more specifically at the end, and I just have no interest in that.
And even the possession stuff, like, again, I don't mind the whole abusive boyfriend thing if the movie was willing to be more about that. Everything feels like a subplot. Even the possession stuff feels like it's happening in the background of the movie until the movie becomes just about that for like two scenes, and then we're back to sweeping the floor. Everything like feels like it's happening in the background until all of a sudden, oh, by the way, the movie is about this thing. And it's like, wait, no, two scenes ago it was about this other thing.
Yeah.
So I find that a little bit frustrating. Just, again, I'm talking in terms of the way that the movie is put together. I'm not talking about the ideas that it's presenting.
No, I agree. I mean, it could have been like a better miniseries or something.
Maybe, yeah. And again, so that's why I say I wonder if the book fixes a lot of these things, you know, because it just has more room to live in this world a little bit, and it's not sort of rushing from beat to beat. Or maybe the book is just like this. I have no idea.
You're asking the wrong person. I've not read it yet. I'm gonna read it and I'll get back to you on it.
Please do.
Yeah. But I mean, I might have like my chronology wrong, but obviously like it caught. I mean, like it does. I agree with you. Like you're not the only person I've ever heard of who likes Practical Magic. And then right around that same time, I mean, Charmed happened, yeah. And that was ran for a really long time.
The 90s were like really,
yeah,
it was like a resurgence thing
with the craft. And then there was even shows like the one with Jenna Dewan Tatum, The Wizards of West End. It was like a
never
TV show
it.
For a couple years. So I don't know. I mean, like, there's it's a group and a story that I would like to see more of. I would like to learn more about these stories. I think that, like you said, a matter of adaptation and stuff like that. Like, if you have a series, then you have space for all these things to be separate episodes, and you can bring in characterization that, like, through familiarity, it's like you know, you have a warmth to these people. But I don't know. Yeah, I just felt like with this movie, it was all a lot of ingredients that didn't really turn into an appetizing recipe. And that is the stupidest thing I've ever said on the show.
I really like, there's two moments that I want to call attention to that I really like. One is at the beginning when we're looking at Kid Sandra Bullock and Kid Nicole Kidman, where they're talking about how love is this awful, you know, painful, emotional thing. And the young Nicole Kidman says, I can't wait to be in love. It's such a great character moment. It tells you exactly who this person is, that she just like sort of thrives on drama and is anyway. And I also really like the scene where Sandra Bullock talks to Aidan Quinn and says, like, I wished for you. That's why you're here. And I'm never going to know. I don't remember exactly what it's like. I'm never going to know if I really love you or if it's just this wish. Mm-hmm. And you, I'm never going to know if you really love me. No. I have it back.
Close.
I'm never going to know if you love me because of this wish that I made. And you're never going to know if I love you or if I just don't want you to, like, put me in jail.
Yeah, and yeah, that's it.
As he's walking away, he says, I wished for you too. And there's a, it cuts back to a reaction shot of Sandra Bullock, like, sort of breaking down. And it's really good. Like, I'm, you know, pretty fragile right now as it is. So maybe that's informing, how I reacted to that scene. But, it got me.
Yeah. I mean, I like to say that I didn't cry the last time that that movie had that scene happen. So I think I've made some progress, but
oh, nice job.
I do like that. I do. Well, I don't know. There's really not any scenes I don't like. Obviously you guys are on a different page, but I will say there is one thing I don't like about the movie. I know. There's the scene where, Sandra is like following him to tell him the truth. And then they just happen to be in front of his like Airbnb or something. Airbnb wasn't a thing in 1998, but let's just go with it.
Yeah.
And then she, like, the CGI of his green eye was never there. Like, it was always two blue eyes, and then, like, they're making out, and suddenly, like, he has, like, a horribly CGI'd green eye. Mm-hmm. I just... That was, like, comedic relief for you, right? At least, Adam,
that
since you thought this was going to be a comedy.
No, I didn't even notice that.
You didn't notice that?
No, but I'm really bad, like...
It even has, like, a...
I don't notice Andrew McCarthy's wig at the end of Pretty in Pink either. So, I mean, like, I just don't have an eye for these things.
Patrick just told me about that.
How have you guys not noticed the wig? Every time I watch it, I'm like, oh no, Blaine is sick.
Well, I don't know. That's... I don't have hair. I don't look at people's hair anymore.
That's probably also like my second most seen movie behind Practical Magic. Wow. Pretty in Pink, by the way.
Okay.
And I never noticed it. I never noticed it until you pointed it out, and now I can't unnotice it, and I'm so upset.
I'm weirdly obsessed, though, with... I don't know if I'm obsessed with it. I just tend to notice hair in movies. Like, I don't like the movie Cocktail, but I find it maddening to watch because it was clearly shot at two different times and the length of Tom Cruise's hair switches from scene to scene. I just saw The Predator and, like, I was like, oh, look at that dude's reshoot wig. And it made me crazy. Kate Mara's reshoot wig and Fantastic Four. Like, I tend to notice these things.
Can you do me a favor, Alejandra? Because I feel very bad about dumping on Practical Magic. Can you say something bad about Wishmaster, please?
I don't want to break up this writing marriage, so I'm going to go ahead and pass.
No, do it. I mean, like, this isn't a test. I just, like, I want to alleviate my guilt.
You don't have to feel guilty. It's not, like, a big deal. But I guess saying that I don't actually remember anything about Wishmaster would be
pretty bad.
Speaking of hair, this movie has great hair. I'm actually getting a haircut on Sunday, and I'm gonna take a picture of Nicole Kidman and tell them that's what I want.
Are you gonna dye it?
No, I'm not gonna dye it. That's terrifying.
What? She had red hair.
That's true.
Well, I meant like
the haircut.
I thought
it was a natural question.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but cut. Like, it's so scary. That's a scary color, and only Nicole Kidman can pull it off.
I have to say, and this doesn't color my viewing of this movie, I've probably seen it like 4 times now, which is a lot of times for a movie that I'm not crazy about, but I keep coming back to it thinking like, maybe now that I'm older, I'm going to find something. because I did see it when it came out, and then I saw it again maybe when it came out on DVD, and then I've watched it probably twice
right.
in the last.
You were already like 28 or something by
months.
Then.
Hey, take it easy, child. but when the movie came out in 98, and this is, I have this association. It doesn't color my viewing of the movie. I just want to repeat that. I had to get my appendix out in late summer of 98. So I had this horrible pain. I was in the hospital for several days, had surgery, came home, was recuperating for like a week. I think some advancements have been made where it doesn't take that long to get over it now. But during this recuperation time, one of the things that I did to pass the time was read EW's Fall Preview. And on the cover of EW's Fall Preview, Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman for Practical Magic. It was like, this is one of the most hotly anticipated movies of the fall because it was based on this beloved book. So my appendicitis and Practical Magic go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. I think it was foreshadowing.
That's perhaps.
It's like me with Vampire in Brooklyn and Mono.
Yeah. Very same. Let me ask a question. Why does this movie cost $75 million to make?
This was the time when movie stars were getting $20 million a movie. I think I'm sure she got Sandra Bullock got like $20 million and Nicole Kidman got like 15
but
or something.
Isn't this during Sandra Bullock's like kind of dry period? Like, what was her last big movie?
Well, she
Speed.
Did that. No, but she had While You Were Sleeping did well. The Net did well. That was 95.
Okay.
And then Time to Kill was 96, and she was still on top of her game then. I think Speed 2 was she probably booked this right before Speed 2.
I mean, I know it's a high profile movie. Yeah. In my head, it's right around that like Two If by C, In Love and War period.
Yeah.
And she doesn't bounce back until like 28 Days.
Hmm. I don't know.
I don't know. These were all, unfortunately, when you were an infant.
Do you have access to the accounting books of Practical Magic? I would like to see where this budget went.
Maybe it was that last sequence where they had to, like, CGI fly them.
Happy to pay for the prints and advertising.
No, I have no idea why this movie cost so much. I'm trying to think about it, and, like, I can't
find them. Yeah. I was so surprised when I looked up the budget, because I wanted to see how much it made. I couldn't remember if this movie was a hit.
Yeah.
It did okay, but it was so expensive that it couldn't recoup its budget. It made like $68 million, which isn't bad if the movie had been made for like $30 million, which is probably what it should have been made for.
Maybe he did stay at an Airbnb. I have questions about witches.
Okay.
So, all right, what is your favorite depiction of witches in movies or television or anything else?
I would say this or the
this?
Witch. Yes.
Or the witch? Like the Vavitch witch?
Yeah, the witch.
Those could not be at two more opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. I'm a multifaceted person.
You are.
Yeah. You're like either sisterhood or a crow pecking at a boob.
Eating a baby or dustbuster.
Yep. what is your favorite part about witches in general?
The sisterhood aspect of it.
Okay.
I know that like a lot of my friends and I have, especially online, gotten really close because we're not witches. I'm not a witch. Why? Surprise. But I like what it stands for, and I like what it means, and I like what it does. So.
Okay.
That was super vague.
A little bit.
Like a good interviewer, I will move on to the next question.
I feel like I'm not really doing the movie justice, but it's really hard because you guys are not like buttering up at all. So
I'm genuinely like open to wanting to understand what it is that you love about it. Honestly, I don't think I'm going to love it, you know, like, which is fine, but I'm not trying to come in and like tell you why you are wrong for liking it. I'm only explaining why it's not working for me and wanting to understand why it does work for you. 'Cause I think that's an interesting conversation.
Next question.
Wow. Have you seen Charmed? I've never seen Charmed. Is it good? Is it good?
I really like it. I'm more of a Buffy person.
Is it a good depiction of witches?
I think you'll like it because it has a lot of the fantastical stuff.
Should I watch that version of Charmed or the new one with Melanie Diaz because she's wonderful?
I actually really think you would like Charmed a lot. It's super 90s.
Mm. 90s, you say.
Everything. Oh my gosh, I've been listening to like Boys to Men all week and I can't stop thinking about Adam when I listen to them.
Except
everything
I saw
90s.
You tweet something inflammatory that you thought that end. What was it? What did you say was the best?
Water Runs.
No
Water
way.
Runs
Have you listened to On Bended Knee recently?
I don't know what either of you were talking about.
That was from 94. You said you didn't know songs after 95.
Turns
yesterday.
Out I lied. Okay. I don't know that. If it wasn't a big Boys to Men hit, I don't know it. So we're looking at...
It was
at
a big Boys to Men
End
hit.
Of the Road.
Yeah.
So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday.
Yeah.
Motown Philly.
Yeah.
I might be out.
I'll Make Love to You.
I'm aware of it.
What do you mean you're aware
because
of it?
Because it's used ironically in a movie, and I don't remember what movie.
Yeah, by people who don't know anything. All right, anyways. You're not a witch, but have you ever tried to cast a spell before, and how did it go?
This is embarrassing. Yeah,
it's
I know.
It's not
I
meant
mean,
to be embarrassing. Like,
I have a spell book, and there's actually, like, a botanics, and I said that with air quotes, a botanical shop, whatever, right by my house, because I live in Miami, and there's a lot of Cubans here, and not to make, like, sweeping statements about Cubans, but you know, brujeria and like santeria is a thing here. So I went to the shop once, I got some stuff, I never did anything with it. Next question.
Okay.
She never inhaled.
Exactly.
Are there real life warlocks? And are there good warlocks and bad warlocks? Like, there's good witches and bad witches.
I don't know about warlocks. I would just say, like, if by warlocks you mean, like, male witches?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's male witches. There's absolutely male witches. But I would just call them male witches, or just witches in general. I don't know if I'd call them warlocks.
Okay.
If there was a show about three warlocks, does that still maintain the sisterhood aspect of witchcraft that you like so much?
Definitely. I don't think feminism is reduced to just women.
Okay.
I got a pitch.
Okay.
Three warlocks who also play for the Chicago White Sox, and they're called War Sox. And they all live together in one apartment.
Yeah.
Who are we casting?
Me, Mike Pomero.
Adam
Thass.
Yeah.
Mark Ahn is the neighbor across the street.
Damn, Patrick.
No, it's fine. Out. It's fine. Listen.
Well, Patrick's directing it, so.
Oh, no. I'm dead in a gutter. Not on the show. I'm talking about in real life. I'm dead in a gutter.
I'll bring you back to life.
What? Witchcraft?
Yeah.
You're a warlock.
Yeah. I don't think Kabbalah has anything to do with witchcraft, does it? I know it's Jewish mysticism.
I don't think there's the same thing.
Well, I don't know. I think, like,
I've got a Judaism for Dummies book at home, but I haven't dabbled in the Kabbalah yet.
I think you're more...
Are there Jewish warlocks,
you know,
is my
qualified
point.
You're more qualified to answer that question than I am.
Okay. And then the last thing I was going to ask, if you did do spells, I was going to say, can you cast a good spell on me from across state lines that I will notice tomorrow morning?
What's the spell?
I don't know. Like, just like... I wake up, and...
You're in Wishmaster.
Well, I don't want that. Terrible. I don't want that.
Hot dogs in a ballgame.
Yeah, that's true. Like, like I get on the Metra, and This Kiss is playing, or something like that.
That's...
Oh my god, I'm so glad.
That would be the worst spell ever.
I'm so glad you said that. Okay. I really like movie kisses, obviously. So I like to think about my favorite very often, and I think that one is on my list. I know you guys said that you didn't like This Kiss, but that is a great song. Very on the nose for the scene, but it was a good kiss.
Wait, do you like the song or the kiss?
She's saying she likes both.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think the kiss is okay. I think the song is kind of a nightmare.
Oh, I'll take that song over any of that Shania Twain stuff from around the same time.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree.
I like Shania Twain, too. I actually have a playlist with both of them on it. Okay, for listeners, though, I'm trying to find, like, a really good GIF. I'm going to get attacked for that again. But I'm trying to find a good GIF of that kiss, the running kiss from the, like, first 20 minutes of the movie. But I can't find one, so if you find one, please, like, send it to me on Twitter.
Just type in on Feuerstein GIF.
You'd have to search through so many, though.
Yeah.
So I know you said this is the most accurate depiction of witches, and I know you said you love this movie. So is this your favorite movie about witches?
I think The Witch is my favorite movie about witches.
Okay.
Just because it's a better movie.
Yes, it is. I would agree with that statement.
But it takes a lot for me to want to rewatch. I mean, not want to rewatch The Witch. It's just so depressing to me.
Absolutely.
So I, like, don't rewatch that as much as I rewatch this one. I think this is, like, really warm. And I know that Adam likes the way this looks. And I really like the way this looks, too. It definitely, like, makes me want to be somewhere in New England in the fall. Mm-hmm. So I'm more likely to reach out to this one. Yeah. And I also do want to say Season of the Witch is super accurate, too.
Okay.
I think it. Man, that movie was way ahead of its time. Like, yeah. I'm going to get so sad talking about Romero, but I think more people need to watch that. Because every time I mention Season of the Witch, people think I'm talking about Halloween.
Yeah, which is understandable.
At least they're not thinking you're talking about that Nicolas Cage movie.
Oh, gosh, there was a movie called Season of the Witch.
Yeah.
I totally repressed that from my memory.
Apparently everyone did, because, yeah, it's like when you say Point Break, nobody thinks you're talking about the remake.
There's a remake.
Exactly. Do you like the score for this movie?
I don't really notice it. I still
I have an interesting story about that. They threw out the score.
I know.
Yeah, and then this was like a
last minute Alan Silvestri score. Yeah. How do you not notice it? It is like oppressively in your face.
I never noticed it. Uh-oh. Just because. I mean, for me. Oh shit. Oh yeah. Okay. For me. I don't know. I really was never like, wow, that score is really bad.
I think it's just—it's one of those things that to me just—it feels so on the nose and is like trying to convey certain things instead of capturing certain emotions and hoping that it evokes them in you. It's like you're going to feel like this in this scene. All movie music is a form of manipulation, but I think some of it is a little bit more bald-faced, and I just think this one again. This score feels very pandery to me.
I'm sure, like, if I rewatch it, I'll notice it. But I'm trying to remember any bit of it, and I can't.
Okay.
Like, I'm trying really hard, and I can't. I do remember, like, the songs. Like, the not score songs, just, like, the movie soundtrack songs. You, and I think they're fine.
I thought of you when I saw the soundtrack list, because there's, like, two Stevie Nicks songs on here, right?
Oh, my God, yes. I love those songs so much. Crystal's my favorite.
Were they for the movie or were they, or older?
I actually
Stevie
have
Nick songs?
No idea. I think they're on an album. I know "Crystal" is actually a Fleetwood Mac song, so I think she just redid it and re-recorded it for this. I'm not sure about the other one.
I guess we can wrap up the conversation about Practical Magic, but I do want to give you kind of the last word. Oh, by the way, this movie won a Blockbuster Award for Favorite Supporting Actress, Comedy Romance, for Stockard Channing.
Oh my God, she's so beautiful.
Aidan Quinn
in this movie.
Lost.
He was nominated?
He sure was, as was Faith Hill also lost. And
Faith
Diane Weiss. Sorry, all these people, no, her song. All these people were nominated for Blockbuster Awards, but only Stockard Channing ran away with the busty.
I'm
just not what it was called.
Like the aunts?
What?
Do you guys like the aunts?
The aunts? Like Beyonce? Is that what you call
it? No, the aunts. The aunts.
Oh, the aunts.
This is one of those things
the aunts.
Where, like...
You mean the aunts? We're from the Midwest.
Aunt?
Yeah. What do you call them? Aunt Man? In the Wasp? Aunt Man in the Wasp.
They're fine. They're fine.
I like them. I like this scene where, like, I don't know, I thought it was funny. Where they're, like, going to take care of the little girls, and then Sandra Bullock is like, okay, but no dancing under the moon naked or whatever.
Well, yeah, they're kids.
I think. Well, yeah, no, but it was really funny. And then, like, I don't know if you guys noticed, but, like, when they come back, they're like, oh, my God, Mom, we danced under the moon naked. It was so fun. I don't know. I thought it was funny. But anyway, I love the ants.
Yeah. They're fine.
Yeah. Okay. I remember from when I started working at Blockbuster that Practical Magic, it was well after it had its video release, but it did rent well. It had maybe like 3 or 4 cover boxes.
It does not surprise me that it would rent well because it's a movie that not a ton of people went to see in theaters. Mm-hmm. Has two incredibly popular actors, and is very easy to put on. You know, like
that's important too because like not to be you know whatever. It's like you know you got your Life is Beautifuls and you got all these other movies that were like a big deal at the time, but like they didn't rent that well.
No. Who and this wants one to rented feel that
well.
Way.
Yeah, this exactly. one rented well. Right. There's something to be said for that. It's like you had mentioned one time with your Netflix queue where it's like, you know, hey, I watched a Van Damme movie instead of watching, you know, like Touch of Evil.
Right.
You watch Death Spot instead of Touch of Evil. And it's like, yeah, there's something to be said about that. Like these movies are not knocking the more important movie, sure. but like these movies aren't just filler. They're like... So there's something that draws people to them and in a genuine, uncomplicated way, and they should be celebrated too.
There are plenty of Practical Magic equivalents that I love as much as Alejandra loves this one.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a very light-hearted movie, although it, like, to me, says something important. And I think that because it's so light-hearted, it's more likely to be seen by a lot of people. And I also think that's important because it is saying something that everyone needs to hear, especially today. So I think if you haven't seen Practical Magic in a long time, you should definitely put it on again. Even if you don't like it afterwards, it's totally fine. But I don't think it like needs, I don't know. Maybe it's because I never had, like, super high expectations for it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a movie that is, like, light, and I don't expect it to be, like, this really deep and, like, mind-blowing, thought-provoking thing. So I just put it on when I want to feel good, and I think it does a good job of that, so.
My expectations were only high because I like Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone and 2 Weeks Notice. So it's like, I thought it was right for me. It was right there.
And I'm not being defensive. I don't need it to be deep. I'm fine with it being lighthearted, pleasant. I need it to function dramatically, and I don't quite think it does. But that's me. And I definitely, you know, try to keep an open mind and was excited to revisit it because, and I've talked about this phenomenon before, like where you are watching a movie sort of through someone else's eyes and you're trying to, you know, you're seeing what they love in it. And I really was trying to do that. And unfortunately I just wasn't able to get there. So I apologize to you.
It's okay.
Thank you.
Patrick did this to me with Silver Linings Playbook.
It's true.
So it's okay.
It's true. I try. I make the effort.
That's what counts.
Right. I'm not willing to just write something off and say, no, that's garbage. Anyway, thank you guys very much for doing this show. I have no idea if we did the movie justice, Alejandra, and I'm very sorry if this was a disappointment because there's obviously so much buildup because it took us so long to do this. So hopefully...
It's okay. I feel like everyone's going to be mad at me, but...
If anything, people will be mad at Patrick and I think.
Yeah, no, nobody's going to be mad at you.
Yeah.
For liking something? Why would somebody be mad at you for liking something?
Well, just because I couldn't, like, put, like, I don't know. There was, like, a lot more I wanted to say, but I just don't know how to say it.
Okay. That's okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. Please continue to participate in Scary Movie Month and the Scary Movie Challenge. Keep those 7-word reviews coming. We are going to keep trying to put out podcasts, extra podcasts, bonus content, fun stuff for Scary Movie Month. We're not even halfway done yet, so we got a lot more to come. Thank you guys both for being on the show. You are both good witches.
That's right, I'm back. Woo! Hang on to your husbands, girls. Ooh.